feet and daylight unto my path. And a light unto, a light unto my path, my path.
Welcome to Searchlight, a survey through Scripture with Pastor John Corson. It is our desire to bring you a systematic study of the entire Bible, chapter by chapter, book by book. Sometimes we can look at a situation and think we have it all figured out. We see the outward evidence, and from that, we draw conclusions about a person's heart. In our study in 1 Samuel 21, we are looking at a situation that may seem easy to figure out, but we will soon see otherwise. The story involves David, who is on the run from King Saul. Although David has done nothing wrong, Saul is trying to kill him. Now, before we got to this story on our last program, we looked at a wonderful psalm of David, Psalm 34. Keep this in mind because it will come into play later in our study. Let's now join Pastor John and see what is happening with David.
David must have thought, there's no sanctuary for me here in Israel. Saul and his army are determined to get me. Nobody is really standing with me, offering to truly defend me. I've got to split. And so he goes to Philistine country. He says, probably, you know, Achish, the king of Gath, he'll receive me. Because I did him a giant favor. He had a giant rival in his city, Achish did. A big guy by the name of Goliath. And I know how kings feel about rivals. My king is really down on me, David must have thought. So no doubt Achish, king of Gath, would have been worried about Goliath. I did him a favor. I can go there to Gath. I can find refuge in Gath. So David makes his way to Gath that day. He goes into the enemy city. He offers himself to the king of the Philistines, incredibly. Well, the servants of Achish said to Achish, "Is not this David, the king of the land?" This is the guy who's the king in Israel. They weren't quite right about that. They went on to say, "And did not they sing one to another about him in dances, saying, 'Saul hath slain his thousands, but David his 10,000s?" Achish was approached by his servants, by his men. "Do you know who's come into the city? David. They sing songs about him in Israel. He's supposed to be the king of Israel. And you know what, Achish? If you allow him to stay here, he's got designs for this city. He's going to wipe you out. He's going to overthrow you." That's the implication in the story. David hears this. David realizes there's a buzz around town that, hey, all of a sudden things have backfired a bit. That now Achish is worried about David being in the city. David realizes that. In verse 12 it says, David laid up these words that were being talked about, the buzz in the community. He laid up those words in his heart. He was sore afraid of Achish, the king of Gath. Now he himself, David, says, "Oh my, I've made a goof. I've made a gaff," or a gaff, whatever it might be. "I've made a mistake. What do I do now? I came here to find sanctuary. I came here to find refuge. And now Achish, he's going to do me in." So what does he do? Verse 13. David changed his behavior before them. He feigned himself mad and scrabbled on the doors of the gate. David says, "I've got to get out of here. This isn't working out right. But the gates are closed. I'm hemmed in. There's no way out unless I act insane. So he starts acting crazy. He scrabbles at the door, the closed gates. Now, that doesn't mean that he took seven letters and, you know, 3 points for each square that he filled in. It wasn't Scrabble like we play. When it says he scrabbled at the door, it means that he dug his fingernails into the wooden gate and began to claw like a crazy guy would until no doubt his fingers would begin to bleed. He was playing as though he was crazy. And on top of that, verse 13 says, he let spittle fall down on his beard. Picture this in your mind's eye. A crazy guy clawing at the closed gate with big stuff, green junk coming down and stuff stuck in his beard and all around his mouth and dripping to the ground below. Oh, man. I know about this. Every Saturday when I was growing up, it seems like every single Saturday, it seems to me it went on for years. I don't know. But my brother Dave, who's 6 years older than me, Dave and I had spit wars every single Saturday morning. And hey, it was brutal. Because you see, well, Dave had this talent for drawing deeply from within. And he could really, well, he was very good at that particular weaponry of forming the spittle in such a way that it would make a real impact when it reached its target. And the problem was, frankly, these spit wars every Saturday, well, see, we were there in our room. We shared the room, and we had bunk beds. He was on the top. I was on the bottom, which gave him a very distinct advantage. He would spit down, and that spittle would gain velocity. And I would just kind of spit up, but it just came right back in my face. Terrible, running down my face and all the rest. Well, be that as it may, David, he has spittle running down his face and caught in his beard, and the people look on like you, disgusted, offended. What in the world is he doing? Look at him, clawing the gates. Acting crazy. He's lost his mind, you see. Then said Achish, verse 14, to his servants, Lo, see this man? He's mad. Why have you brought him to me then? Have I need of another madman? That's the implication. I've got enough crazy guys in this city. Have I need of another madman that you have brought this fellow to play the madman in my presence? Shall this fellow come out of my house or come into my house, pardon me? Open the gates. Let him go. I don't have need of another crazy guy to be in this city, to be in my house. And with that, the gates were opened up and David made his way out of the city of Gath that day. And then Psalm 34 kicks in. The psalm that we read, David stops and he pens that psalm. He writes that song. I will bless the Lord at all times. His praise shall continually be in my mouth. Many are the afflictions of the righteous, but the Lord delivers him out of them all. Now, this morning, I come to you with a question. This morning, I want you to think through a discussion. What if you lived back then? What if you were in the country of Israel, part of God's covenant people? What if you were watching this story unfold? If you heard about these events, but you didn't have the Bible, obviously, in front of you telling this story, what would you think? I fear I know what I might say. Hey, did you hear? It's such a sad story. David, you remember David? The guy that had such courage in killing Goliath with a stone and a sling. Man, what a blessing. Remember, did you hear how he used to pluck the strings on the harp? The songs he would write were sweet, and the way that he could sing was, man, heavenly. Such potential. And remember, we heard rumors about how the prophet Samuel, bless his name, took a horn of oil and poured it on David's head when David was a little guy there at Bethlehem and anointed him in a special way. I hate to tell you this, but David has gone crazy. He's left us. He was once one of us, but he's left us. He's gone over to the side of the enemy. He's given himself into the service of the enemy. And besides that, he's acting crazy. It's so sad. He had such potential. But I don't want to gossip. You need to know this, though. On the way to defecting the traitor, on the way to leaving us and joining the Philistine army, he and a couple of friends that he was traveling with were hungry. And they stopped off at a town called Nob, where the tabernacle was. And they said to Ahimelech, the priest, "We're hungry." And then David had the audacity to eat bread that was supposed to be eaten only by the priests, the showbread. But David, he ate it. He knew better than that. He's not a priest. It's not lawful for him to eat of that bread. But it gets worse. You might say that's a technicality, but wait, let me tell you the story. When Ahimelech, the priest, said, "David, what are you doing here? Why are you here at Nob? Why are you hungry? Where's your royal entourage? You're part of Saul's court, aren't you?" David said, "I'm going on a secret errand for King Saul. He's given me a secret job to do. I can't tell you about it, Ahimelech, but I need some bread." He lied to the priest. "So what, you say? Here's what. A little bit later, Saul found out that David had been there at Nob and taken the bread. The priests allowed that to happen. And Saul was so incensed that he ordered the death of Ahimelech the priest and 84 other priests. Heads were lopped off. Blood was shed. Innocent priests died because David lied. David lied. Breaks my heart to tell you this, but you need to know. David, the guy with such potential, such promise, he's a liar. It's brought about 85 priests' death. He's with the enemy. He's living in Gath. He's crazy. He's behaving bizarrely. David. Sad to say, that's very well likely what I might have said that day, not knowing the story. From God's perspective, God says, that's not the way it really is. God says, you, John, would write him off, scratch him off the list, turn your back on him, walk away from him. But John, there's a problem, because you don't see David the way that I do. Oh, it's true. He's in Gath. It's true. He's acting crazy. It's true. He lied to the priest. It's true that people died tragically. All of that is true. But what you don't see, John, what I see, and you can't and don't, only I can, only I do, I see his heart. Now, kids, Applegate folks, listen to me. Listen to me and never forget this. I forgot what I was going to say. No, just kidding. Listen to me very carefully here. God's acceptance, God's forgiveness is conditional. His accepting a person, his forgiving a person is conditioned upon what that person desires in his or her heart. If a person says, I want nothing to do with God, I don't care about God, I'm not interested in God, well, then that person will not be accepted by God or forgiven, because God sees the heart. And that person has committed the blasphemy of the Spirit, which is the unpardonable sin. God's forgiveness and God's acceptance is conditional because he sees the heart. But our forgiveness towards others and our acceptance of others must be unconditional. Why? Because we can't see and don't see the heart of anybody. Man looks on the outward appearance, but God looks at the heart. From the outward appearance, David is crazy. David has defected. David is lost. David, it's a tragedy and a travesty. There's no hope for him, really. But God says, oh, no. All those things may be true outwardly in your estimation, but I see his heart. Listen to what he's writing. The very minute he leaves Gath, leaves the city, he writes a psalm that is so precious. It even has a prophecy that relates to my son, whom I will send, that none of his bones, my son's bones, will be broken. I am using that man because he has a heart that's after me. What kind of heart? One other psalm I want us to look at. Two psalms come out of this story. Psalm 34, when he was let out of the city gates, but another psalm when he was still in the city, clawing at the gates and spittle running down his beard grossly. Turn with me to Psalm 56. And check this out. Because God is doing this for a reason. A bizarre story where it seems like a man with great potential has defected. God says, but I want you to see it from my perspective. What's going on in his heart? Psalm 56, look at what it says right under Psalm 56. It says, to the chief musician of David, when the Philistines took him. That is, he was playing crazy and they grabbed him there in Gath. David wrote, he composed at that time, in that moment, he wrote this song, be merciful unto me, O God, for man would swallow me up. He, fighting daily, oppresseth me. Mine enemies would daily swallow me up, for they be many that fight against me, O thou most high. Verse 3, what time I am afraid, I will trust in thee. In God I will praise his word. In God I have put my trust. I will not fear what flesh can do to me. Every day they twist my words. All their thoughts are against me. They gather themselves together. They hide themselves to ambush me. They mark my steps. Shall they, verse 7, escape by iniquity? In thine anger cast down the people, O God. For you, verse 8, know my wanderings. You put my tears in your bottle. Are they not written in your book? When I cry unto you, then shall my enemies turn back. This I know, verse 9, this I know, God is for me. In God will I praise his word. In the Lord will I praise his word. In God I have put my trust. I will not be afraid what man can do to me. Thy vows are upon me. Your promises are given to me, O God. I will render praise to you, for thou hast delivered my soul from death. You saved my soul eternally. Will you not now deliver my feet from falling that I may walk before God in the light of the living? Wow. This is going on in David's heart at a time when we would say he's lost it. He's through. Write him off. God would say, while you might write him off, I am writing him in my book. He is composing the Bible. He's my man. Because I see his heart, John. You don't, you can't, and you never will be able to look within a man. Only I can see what's in any person, what's in anybody. So what are you suggesting, John? Just this. I wonder how many people we have written off. Because they're in Gath, they used to be here with us or in a church somewhere, but now they don't go to church anymore. They're at the tavern. But pray tell, why are they not here? Why are they out there at the bar? In Gath, in the camp of the enemy. Could it be because they found no sanctuary here? They found no sanctuary in our soul, in our heart? Could it be that they said, people talk about me in church, or they look at me kind of funny because I've had spit in my beard and my fingers are stumpy and bloody. I go there where everybody knows my name. People accept me. Nobody's down on me. They actually listen to me. I'll go there. And perhaps some of us right here say, exactly, if you would wrap this up, I'd be on my way. You know, it's true. David had no one standing by. What about Jonathan? Jonathan loved David. Jonathan is a great man. Jonathan is a hero of mine. But Jonathan, one thing he didn't do was saying, David, I will fight for you. Jonathan said, David, I love you, but you need to leave. No one in Israel, evidently, no one said, you have sanctuary with me, David. You can stay here. We'll stand by you. We'll be a covering for you. We'll die, if necessary, right here beside you. No, no one did that. David was forced to go into the enemy's territory, to the pool hall, to the tavern, to Tinseltown, whatever it might be. He was forced to go because he couldn't find refuge in Israel. Why? They didn't know his heart.
Interesting and sobering. Have we also acted like this? Have we refused to give sanctuary to someone because we didn't see their heart? Please join us next time for the conclusion to this story as we learn what we should do in a situation like this. We'll see you then.
This teaching is also available on the Searchlight website at johncorson.com. You will also find on the website Pastor John's books and other Bible study resources. Again, the address of the website is johncorson.com. That's johncorson.com.
We all go through challenging times in our lives, but we are not alone in these times. We have a faithful and loving God who walks with us day by day. To help us explore the faithfulness of God in these difficult times, Pastor John has made a book available called A Future and a Hope. In this book, John shares some of his personal experiences in dealing with tragedies, including the death of his young wife and later the death of his 16-year-old daughter. As John relates his own stories, we see a God who is faithful and compassionate at all times. A future and hope is especially comforting for those who are currently experiencing tragedy or loss in their life. If you would like this book for yourself or someone you know, you can order it from our website at johncorson.com.
Searchlight is an independent ministry that is not financially supported by any church or organization. We appreciate your prayers and support. May the Lord richly bless you.